Okay, welcome back. So we are, as I said, towards the bottom of Chet Amud Aleph, and we are talking about, again, we've been spending quite a while talking about these three different types of land, and again, to clarify, the payments that we're talking about are all the same on a sort of, you know, dollar per dollar basis, and they are, you're giving back the same amount in terms of, you know, whether you're giving back more land, but the actual sort of value, dollar value, is going to be the same. So you'll give more land of a worse type and less land of a better type. But even within that, the question is there a requirement to try and give from better land at certain times? And again, just when we talk about giving from Ziboris, when we're talking about giving from the worst land, that doesn't mean you have to give from the worst land. The point is that you can choose, in a sense. The person who is, you know, liable to pay, who has to pay, they get the choice. Whereas at other times, the halacha may stipulate that actually they have to give a slightly better quality back. So now we're going to get into a discussion based on the follow. Well, let's read the brayse and then we'll go from there. Okay, so Tana Rabbanan. So as I said, it's from the two dots, about 20 lines from the end of the omit. Tana Rabbanan. Machar le'echad, o le'shlosh abnei adam ke'echad, kulon nichnasu tachas abaylim. So now we're talking about a case where a person has lots of debts, right? They owe all sorts of things, damages, loans, and divorce payments, right? And probably anything in between. And what they've done is they've sold off all their land. So the machar echad, they've sold it all off. So the Brisa says you sell it to, if they've sold it to one person, or they sold it to three different people ke'echad at one time, right? All together, in a sense, you know, in one sale. Whatever that may mean, whether that means before the end of the day or you know, it all basically happens at the same time. Rashi says biyom echad, but I don't think that's specifically one day. I think the point is you cannot divide. You can't say one happens before the other. They happened at the same time. Then what do you do? Kulon nichnasu tachas abayim. Then all of them, in a sense, are in place, would be in place of the original owners, and therefore, if the owner doesn't have anything to pay with, then the land, which has already got a sort of a hook on it, right, what we call nechasim mishubadim, they are already indebted, those lands are already considered to be required for payment if necessary, then those lands would have to go back to the to whoever's coming to make the claim. But the point is that you can choose, the person can come to any of the lands, right? Can take from any of the lands or whichever one is owed to them, because all of them were sold either to one person or they were sold to three separate people, but at the same time. Bezeh achar zeh, what about if they were done one after another? So there we say, kulon govin min ha'acharon. So then you only take back from the last one. Ein lo govin m'shelefonov, if there's not enough in that land, if there's not enough value in that land to fulfill all the payments, to pay back all the debts, then you do Michel Afonov, the one before, then you go one back. Ein lo go for Michel Afonov, and if not, then you have to go two back. So you sort of do it in chronological order, in the order in which they were sold. And again, this is talking about where the debts were incurred before the sale, right? Not where the debts were incurred after the sale, but where the debts were incurred before the sale. Okay. Machron le'echad heichidom. So the Gemara wants to know, when we say you sell it to one person, what exactly does this look like? Ilei mo bevasachas, if you say you sold it to this person in one go, so then that's obvious, right? Hashdalishlosha de'ikalameimar chad minahukodim. When you sell it to three people, you could, in theory, say, you know, maybe one of them should be the first one, right? Maybe the first one who sort of the deal was broken with or whatever. We could come up with a reason why one of them would be expected to sort of step forward, but once you've already clarified that even if it was done to three separate people, as long as it was done in one go, then all the more so. That's obvious. Chad minayu kadim. Amras kulon nichmasu tachas avaylim. You say all of them are in place of the original owners. Machron leechad. If now in the case where you're selling it to one person, right? Mi boy, is it necessary for the brisa to spell it out? Ela pshita, it's obvious, right? So, why? There's no reason to list a case of one person having been sold the land in one go, because that would be obvious. Once you've said three people in one go are required to, they all of them are subject to having their property seized, for these sort of debts, then obviously one person who does it in one go will also be required to subject themselves to that. Rather, it's obvious that what the Bryce is talking about must be that it means that one person bought all of the land, but they didn't do it all in one go, right? They did it in stages. They did it in different deals, perhaps. Okay, umasha kasav shlosha v'kol chad v'chad omarle. So we have the case of three, right? Each one says to the debtor. This is now a different case, right? Where you sell it to three different people at three different stages, right? And each one says, right, if you come to the one who bought first, he says to you, what do you mean? I left you plenty of land to take back. I left you plenty of land to be able to claim back from, right? And therefore, that's where you should go. Don't come to me. Go to the land which was already there, even if it was sold off to someone else. Okay, so then you have to go to that person. But in a sense, your claim is not with me. So hai nami, so to here, akol chad v'chad, on each land, right? This is talking about one person who's bought all the land, but akol chad v'chad, on each field, he can now say, he can say, I left you enough, and therefore, so you could say that basically, in theory, you could say that that they have to take from the last land. So why is that not the case, right? Why do you not have to take from the last piece of land that was bought? We are now talking about a case where one person bought three different types of fields, but they bought them at different stages. The question is, why do the debtors not all take from the last piece of land that was bought? That's what the Gemara reached this conclusion at the point. Okay, so if it was to three people in one go, then you could get all, then they all have to, they're all subject to these payments. If it was three people in stages, then you go back in chronological order. If it's one person in stages, why are we not going back in chronological order? That's what the Gemara is trying to figure out. Okay, everyone with me so far? All right. So, hachob ma'askino. What is the case that we're dealing with? There must be an extra element here. Kigun shelokach idis b'achron. We're talking about a case where you take the best land, you buy the best field last. B'achron. That's the last one you buy. V'chein omer of sheshes, and again we have elsewhere of sheshes actually clarified this explicitly. Kegon shelokach idis b'achrona. That's what happens. Ihachi. So what's the problem? Ihachi lisi kulhu v'ligu midis. Everybody should go and collect from the last one, right? Should all go and collect from the best land. Mishum da omer lahu. So this is what really happens. Mishum da omer lahu. This is the problem. He could say to them, this is now the buyer. So again, we have the debtors, the seller, and the buyer. The seller is the person who owes all the money originally, okay? And now now he has nothing to pay with, right? But because he had land which was already earmarked for this payment, and he sold it off. So the person who bought that land is now stuck paying back from that land, and obviously they're going to have to go and claim it back from their original seller. They're going to have to claim the money back, but that's something they're going to have to deal with. The point here is that he can say, now the buyer, right? So this is the buyer who has now having to pay off the debts of the person who he bought the land from. He could say, "Da omaluhu ishaskisu." If you're going to be quiet, i.e. if you're going to sort of, do this the easy way, right? In a sense, you can come along, you can take what's expected of you. You're going to come and take what you should be taking, right? So you are, let's say you've borrowed money, right? You've borrowed money, then you're required, then really you would be taking from Beinonis, from this mid-level land. So if that's what you're going to take, then that's fine. V'shaklisu k'dinaichu, you take what you're expected to shaklisu, Great, that's what you're going to do. Ve'ilo, but if not, mahadrana shtara tziburis lemore, if not, then I am going to return the document. I'm going to return the contract, the contract of sale to the original owner of the ziburis land, of the worst type of land. V'shaklisu kulchom ziburis, and then you're all going to have to go and collect from that, because that's now going to be in the hands of the owner. And when you have something in the hands of the original owner, right, that's what we call nechasim b'nei chorek. That means it's right there. So there, that is property which is always the primary one to go for. You only go back to these nechasim mishubodim, to these earmarked properties which now have moved on to somebody else, if the person doesn't have any money to pay back or any properties to pay back themselves. If they have something themselves, if the person who incurred the original debt has money or properties, then they're the ones who have to do it. You only go back to their land that's sold off if not. So this is basically what he's saying. If you want to do it the easy way, then that's fine. And if not, then I'm going to return the contract. I do think that that the commentaries clarify over here. And so Rashi doesn't say it, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean literally that you return the contract. I think it means you have to sell it back. Actually, you do have to go through the sort of the process of actually selling it back. I don't think returning the contract is enough, but be that as it may, the point is here that it's almost like a little bit of a blackmail, right? It's a sort of a soft blackmail, maybe you call it, where the fellow is basically saying, you know, if you should take what you're owed, right? What you would have taken from the original, the person you should have been collecting from. And if you don't, if you're going to try and take from the most recent land that I bought, which is the best one, which is the one that I really want to hold on to, that's the one that I really like, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to return the worst land, I'm going to sell it back, and then you'll all have to take back from the worst land, and therefore just sort of, let's just do this the easy way, I think is really cool. Okay. Ihachi. Right, ihachi. So now the Gemara, he says, okay, yes, blackmail, soft blackmail, whatever you want to call it. But the point is, then maybe you should say the same thing. Yes.
Can the purchaser effectively put back that bill of sale back to the vendor?
Can you put in it other words, you under it?
Is he liable to take that back, to repurchase the sale effectively?
Is the vendor seller required to?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's required to, but you're saying why would he bother then?
Yeah, I was saying it's a bit unfair on the person who sold in good faith to somebody then to be told, oh, I can't agree with the previous debtors, therefore I'm giving you the land back. I want.
Why did he sell it? He didn't sell in good faith. He has debts to pay.
Well, he had debts to pay, but I mean, assuming that the purchaser knew that. If we're saying he didn't know, okay, fair enough.
I don't know if it makes a difference whether he knew or he didn't know. I think the point is that they belong, meaning in a sense they, it's hard to imagine he knew, because why would he do that then? Why would he buy land that he's going to end up, I don't think the Gemara enters into whether he knows or he doesn't know, but they are very clearly earmarked properties, and the point here is that he, it's an interesting question why he should get involved in the sale at all. The Gemara doesn't really deal with the idea of what I would call tircha, you know, like this sort of the annoyance of having to do a lot of this stuff. But later poskim do talk about when it's a great tircha, then that does factor in, you know, the value of having to like schlep, you know, back and forth and do stuff. Then that does factor in. But that's sort of got to be based on time and place. Clearly, at that time, it sounds like it was a very simple thing to do, in a sense. You know, the sale, and therefore you just sell it back and finished and sort of taken care of very easily. But it is an interesting question as to why he should bother doing it. Yeah, I don't think he's under obligation to, is the short answer. But again, the point here is not... we're constructing a theoretical case, in a sense, yeah? So... You know, he does. In our theoretical case, anything can happen. Not anything, but you know, but like, the point is he does in this case. He goes for it. So that's the point. So we are saying that must be what the Braisa is referring to. That in this particular case, one person has bought the land. He's bought it on three separate occasions. But because he has this claim, because he's saying, I can now return the worst type of land to the original seller, and then you'll have to all take from that. So therefore, you're going to be expected to take what you normally take. So the Gemara now comes along and says, why tell them they should take what they normally take, right? Right? You should take it even a step further. You should say, even with Nazikin, right, that they should, the damages don't even, this person wants their, it sounds like it's sort of almost like a legal blackmail. I keep calling it blackmail, but blackmail is obviously, I'm assuming, illegal. But it's a sort of a, he's basically saying that, I will return this legally, and therefore, or I will sell it back legally, and then you'll be stuck. So he could take that a step further and say to the, even the person who is owed money because of damages, that they shouldn't be taking from Idis. Don't take from the best land, take from this middle land, because otherwise I'm going to return the worst land, and then you're going to have to end up taking from that. Okay, so the Gemara is still not happy. Basically, it says that case doesn't really work because the point is you don't take from you don't take kedinaichu, as the Gemara refers to it, according to the normal order. Even in that case, you would end up having a slightly skewed order, because the person who's owed payments for damages would still be taking from a lower level than they would otherwise. So therefore, the Gemara is again still not happy with that case. Elohacha b'mayaskina. So we're going to have another crack at finding what this case the Bryce is referring to is. Must be talking about orphans, right? We're talking about inheritors, I should call them, really. Inheritors, we're talking about people who have now, this is now the next generation, right? The person who incurred all the debts has passed away, and now all those lands have been sold on. But now I as the buyer don't have the claim. I will return it I say I'm going to now sell it back to the original, to the person who you have the original claim with, because the person you have the original claim with is no longer here, right? And if I sell it back to their estate, right, or to their children, to the next generation, then that's considered like a regular sale in a sense, right? That would be the same as what we're talking about here, i.e., that would be a sale that happens after the person has passed away, after the death has occurred, and therefore you would go with the in a sense the sale that was closer to the original owner, right? The sale that happened through the original owner, rather than the second sale, which sends it back to his estate or to his children, right? Delav b'nei piraon ninhu. Rashi says, is it Rashi here? And he doesn't really clarify. No, okay, but the point is that when you have the next generation down, it is now considered these once again nechasim meshubadim, i.e., the only reason you are able to go and collect from them is because the properties themselves are earmarked, rather than the person being there. You don't have a claim on the person. You have a claim now on the property that once upon a time belonged to the person who owed you this debt or owed you this this payment. Okay, so that sounds like it works, because the point is that although you have now one person who bought in that case doesn't work, right? Because now you have a case where the person bought in order, and they cannot say I'm going to return the worst land. So in a sense, we're back to square one, right? We're back to square one because of the shibuda delay ole did they run. So basically, the point is that you have to. We're stuck once again. We still don't have a case where you have one person who buys land at different intervals, and still the debtors can all come and claim from the regular, from whatever they would have done otherwise. Okay, so the Gemara concludes hilkach leka lemei mahacha hachi. Excuse me. Therefore, because it's now, returning to the orphans, because it's now going back to the inheritors. So therefore, this whole claim of the seller to return the worst land doesn't actually work. And as I said, we're back to square one. Okay, Ella. So now we're fourth line down. Ella, we're going to have another attempt. Okay, another attempt. Mishum de Omar Lahu. Ella, what is the reason? So again, what is the why? How do we have this case where one person buys three types of land at different times? Ella, Mishum de Omar Lahu, Taima Mai Omur Rabbonon. What is the reason why the rabbis set up this case where you in a sense would be claiming from the original debtor rather than from the lands? That would be for the benefit of me, right? For the benefit of this buyer. Ein nifram in chosim meshubadim b'mokam sheyesh b'nei chorim. So that's the principle, right? That is the principle that the rabbi set in place, that Chazal set in place. Ein nifraim min chosim meshubadim b'mokam sheyesh b'nei chorim. You cannot claim from earmarked land, from land that was stuck on to this debt. You cannot claim from that land unless the person has no other money or property, i.e. b'mokam sheyesh b'nei chorim, where you have free land to claim from your debtor, from this person who caused you damage, or the person who you lent a loan, or these divorce payments. If they have something to give you, then that is where you have to claim from. So what the seller is now saying is the reason why that was put in place is for my benefit, for my, you know, in order to protect me as the buyer, because otherwise everyone's going to come, you know, any case of debt, you're going to come and the person will just push you off and say, oh, I sold a piece of land last week, go and get your money from there. So no, the point is that the rabbis put in place that they can't go and get it from there, because we're trying to protect the buyer over the protect the buyer's rights in a sense. And what he's now saying is the buyer is basically responding and saying, "Mishum takanta didi, this is an institution that was put in place for my benefit. Ana baha takanta lo nichali, and right now this principle is working against me. Lo nichali, it's not good for me." And Kida Rava, and this is again follows a principle that Rava introduced to Omar Rava, Kol Ha'omer Efshi B'Takanas Chacham, a very important principle. Efshi B'Takanas Chacham, that this particular rabbinic institution does not work for me. This is talking about in the realm of monetary, monetary sort of benefits. That this particular thing that was put in place to sort of help me out financially is working against me now. Then you can actually say, I don't want to sort of follow this principle in a sense, right? Because it's working against me now, I want to choose to ignore it at the moment. Okay, this is so in a sense, the rabbis put in place something to try and help certain parties. And because that in this particular instance is actually harming those parties, so we're going to remove that institution, remove that principle. And fall back on the original on what was originally there. Let's just finish this off. On I just want to finish off the couple of lines, and then we'll pause for questions and comments. So Yeshiv Takanzchon Kagon Zu Shomin Lo My Kagon Zu. But what does that mean? Just like this, obviously there are other cases in which this applies. Kidur Rav Huna. So we also have another case which Rav Huna introduced, where Rav Huna said to Omer Rav Huna Yechola Isha. Again, a woman can say to her husband, "Eini nizonis ve'eini osa." So usually, what happens in sort of bog standard marriage contract is that the husband is required to provide for their wife, and anything that she earns in a sense becomes his. So what we call eini osa ma'asa yadayim, whatever she earns becomes his. But that's because he's required to support her in every possible way. So he has to give her everything that she requires. But she can say, that doesn't work for me, right? That doesn't work for me. I prefer to do it differently. I prefer that actually I'm earning more than you are, for example, you know, so I don't want to do it that way, or whatever other institution, in a sense, if it's working against her, then that sort of institution that was in place to be for her benefit would then be removed, would be taken away, at least in that particular instance, and you'd fall back on the original, on the original thing, and she would be able to keep whatever she earned for herself. Okay, so those are the two examples the Gemara introduces here. I think there are a couple of others as well, and I think that principle is quite an important one. Comes up in other areas as well. But yes, let's pause for questions, thoughts, comments.
Do we not have to consider the buyer's knowledge? For example, if he knew that the lamb was being sold and it was encumbered or there was a lien on it, why should he then be able to say this isn't working for me, therefore we need to reverse this particular situation? In other words, you've got to, I would have thought, look at what did the buyer know when he bought as regards the state of title and so on.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's clear from the Gemara that we don't look at that, but I don't know why. Why is that so critical?
Because it may well be, let's take a second argument, he knows that there is a lien, so that may affect the purchase price. So knowingly that there would be a claim or a potential claim.
But I don't think it's a potential claim. Why do they say it's a potential claim?
Because it may be an actual claim, but whether or not it is claimed or not, we don't know yet. But what I'm saying is the state of knowledge of the purchaser surely is relevant in deciding whether or not he can use this device to say it's not working for me.
I think it's hard to see how they know altogether. I think the point is clearly that they don't know, because otherwise why would you buy a field that someone is going to come a couple of weeks later and take away from you? Meaning, it's not like this debt. The debt exists, right? Debt exists. Debt is going to have to go back. Now, the buyer doesn't have other lands when you buy this, because if you had other lands when you buy this, then those are the lands which end up being the ones. So you know, in a sense, that, you know, if the person knows, then they know that it's going to end up going back. I don't think we do need. Yeah, I just don't think it's relevant to this. But actually, in terms of on the subject of knowledge, of what I thought you were going to say is something slightly different, which is, what if they don't know that they can make this claim, or sort of don't realize? And the Rosh actually says, see if I can find it here.
This is my next question.
Oh, okay. So the Rosh actually says, where would this be? Yes, it must be over here. Oh, yeah, slightly further ahead. Let's see if I can find the language, because he puts it obviously better than I would. He says it doesn't need to be that the buyer makes this claim. Ela afinu hu im hu lo toin, even if he doesn't make this claim, lo toin zos, beis din tarnim avuro. The beis din is, in a sense, make this claim on his behalf, right? They assume that is what he is claiming. Va'omrim b'chagon zeh psach picha le'ilein. Psach picha le'ilein means literally open your mouth for those who can't speak, right? And that's a verse. But that's an important principle in Bet Din generally, that the court actually sort of, in many cases will recognize that the person should be making this claim. You don't need to have a lawyer, to do this for you. In a sense, the Bet Din argues both sides. I think generally that's the idea. They're sort of trying to get the best to what should happen. And therefore, in this particular case, what should happen is that because this is now working against the buyer, we undo this mechanism and it doesn't anymore work against the buyer. And therefore, EF Shiv Takans Chamim doesn't need to actually be claimed. It can just be assumed that it will work in their favor. Yes, Phil?
I'm a little confused, because there are two parties potentially who are benefited by this set of rules. And the first party that is primarily benefited is, of course, the creditor, the judgment creditor, or the divorced wife who's collecting under the ketubah, because they are granted a lien in respect of their entitlement against the seller. But what we've now moved on to talking about is a rule instituted for the benefit of a buyer from the judgment debtor, the borrower, or the divorced person who's entitled, or who's obliged to pay under the ketubah.
Let me just clarify, because I'm just trying to understand how they've benefited. We're talking about
the fundamental rule is for the benefit of a creditor, is for someone who's got a judgment, yeah? And what it says is that actually the rabbis give a lien on certain types of land for certain types of creditor rights. So that's the fundamental rule. But now we're talking about a different rule. Now we're talking about the rule that deals with where you've got different types of quality of land and how the liens apply to those different types of land where the seller has got these obligations and he's got rid of all his land to one buyer or to multiple buyers. But the fundamental rule is the rule that establishes the lien.
Sorry, so they still can claim that back. That still exists.
They can, but what we're talking about now is not that rule. We're talking about a rule that the sort of is for the ostensibly for the protection of the buyer.
Right.
Who's not the creditor. He's a different person, isn't he?
Right.
And it's quite confusing that we should talk about a rule instituted for the benefit of the buyer, when really the overriding rule is not for the benefit of the buyer. It's just that he's bought, as it were, fettered land, potentially.
Why is it not for his benefit? But it is for his benefit. I don't understand why it's not for his benefit. The point is that when a person comes to claim, let's say you have just a classic loan case, right? The point of this rule is that if I am owed money and I go to the person who I'm owed money, he can't say to me, do you know what? Actually, this is my best land, and I just sold my mid-level land last week. So go to the fellow who I just sold it to, and you can get it from there because you're owed loan payments, so you can go get the mid-level land which I sold last week. So to that, we have this institution which says, no, if you still have land as the debtor, then that is the first port of call, right? That is what you have to give up. And only if you no longer have anything do we go on to the seller. So that institution is in place for the seller. That is only for the benefit of the seller, isn't it?
What happens, I mean, first of all, I'm assuming that the buyer has been told by the seller that there's a claim on that particular land. Now, this buyer could actually buy good land, and because he's got other land, so when the claimant turns up, he can give him inferior land. He doesn't even give him the land he just bought.
Why can he buy land? He has no money.
And I'm saying, no, if somebody who owns land, he sells it to somebody else, that other person, if you like, knows that there is, it could be taken away from him. He could...
No, I don't think they know that. I don't think he knows that. Why are we assuming that they know that? I don't think they
know. But what we have to assume there, Rabbi, is that the seller who sold the land hasn't used the proceeds of sale to discharge the creditor.
Right.
He's done something else with the money.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make.
He's done something else with the money. Okay. So we're dealing with somebody who's...
But the champagne is gone. The champagne is gone.
The champagne is gone.
Yeah. This is the problem. He has nothing to pay back, and therefore the land that was earmarked at the time is the only place, in a sense, to go back to. But again, that's what this principle is, that if he would have something else, then that is what would be taken, right? If he had some, that is the principle here. That's the line of Ein Nifra'im Min Nechasim Meshibadim B'Makam Sheyesh B'nei Chorin, means you cannot take from these earmarked lands if the person has something else that you can take from, right? You can't go back to the earmarked lands which have now been sold off to someone else if the original debtor has other money or properties or goods which can settle this debt.
I guess the point I was trying to make, Rabbi, was that I think that the rule, the rule that we've just looked at says, look, you don't roll the liens You don't have to roll the liens onto the last bit of land, yeah, because that's a rule that's instituted for your benefit, Mr. Buyer. And if you don't want to take advantage of that, then you don't have to. That's, I think, what the argument is here.
Right.
And what I'm saying is that, well, hang on a minute, that's not why the rule is there at all. The rule is there to protect the third party, who is the creditor. Against.
It's not there to protect the creditor. Why is it there?
It must be. It must be, because the lien is there to protect the creditor.
No, but the lien, the rule is not the lien. The existence of the lien exists. That's independent. It's how
the lien applies that we're talking about.
Right, but again, the creditor will get their money. The creditor will get this land. The point is whether they have to go to the whether the seller has to be the first port of call. Sorry, yeah, whether the first port of call is this debtor, is the original debtor, or whether the buyer can be I don't see how it's there for the benefit of the creditor at all.
Well, we're dealing with a case where the seller hasn't satisfied the debt,
right?
So we're having to look at and we're saying that actually this rule here is supposed to have been instituted. This rule says, you know what? You don't have to look at the last bit of land that was purchased. If it was the best quality land, the buyer can say, hang on a minute. You go to whichever quality land that was sold by the seller you were originally entitled to, because otherwise this rule would apply to my disbenefit.
Right.
And I think all I'm saying is that the rule isn't. The overarching reason for the rule is for the benefit of the creditor, not for the buyer of the land.
Yeah, I still don't see why it's for the benefit of the creditor. The creditor has earmarked land regardless of where it's coming from. The point here is that is for the benefit of the buy of the credit of the seller. Sorry, not the seller, of the buyer, because they're basically Yeah, I don't see how it's for the benefit of the creditor.
You're saying the case must be one where the credit, it doesn't matter where it comes from the creditor's perspective, but it does matter on whose burden it falls, on which buyer.
Oh, you're saying that the creditor's ending up with a worse value. You're saying
for your position to be correct, then it ought to be the case that the creditor can get his value out of whatever quality land. There's more than enough for the creditor, no matter what land he looks to. Because we're not really looking at that, are we? We're assuming that to be the case here, I think.
Yeah, well, we're in a sense going a step further than that. What we're saying actually is no, they may lose out. Let's go back to a regular case, okay? More regular case, okay? Just you have, for example, you know, you have three fields, right? You're now the debtor. You have three fields, and you sell off the best field, right? You sell off the best field after you have just, I don't know, driven into someone's car, right? So you've incurred damages, and then you sell off your best field. Now the person comes to claim their money. This rule, this principle, tells us that. Although usually someone who's incurred, you know, who's owed damage payments takes from the best land, and the best land that this fellow had at the time of the damages was, I don't know, you know, was whatever it was, field A. But because field A has now been sold off, this rule says that in order to protect these sellers, so you now no longer can take from field A, and you can only take from what the person who has caused you damage has. In a sense, it works against the creditor from the start. I don't think it's there for the creditor's benefit at all. I think it's working in some sense against the creditor because his debtor has gone off and sold this land after incurring the debt. He's actually having to take a worse type of land as a result of that, because now this better land which he might have got has got, again, it's a, as we've said in the past, the difference between the quality, you're getting the same dollar value. So it's, you know, it's small. We're talking about small benefit, but the point is still that you are getting a worse type of land as a result of it. So I think, as I said, the rule is definitely there for the benefit of the seller, because the creditor is getting, in the classic case, the creditor is having to take whatever their debtor has at the time, rather than going on to what they might have sold since incurring the debt or the damages or anything like
that. It strikes me then, Rabbi, that in those times it was never good being a creditor, because quite clearly, if the debtor can sell off the land and pass on the debt without, as Phil said before, receiving the proceeds of the sale to discharge that debt, then basically the seller, the debtor, is walking away scot-free potentially, because the debt travels with the land, which may or may not be known to be encumbered when the purchaser bought it. So it seems to me the only one who's losing out here from day one is actually the creditor. If there's no way of enforcing, once the sale of the land, that those proceeds go to discharge the debt, it seems to me the creditor is really always having to fight to recover.
But the creditor gets the land.
Yeah, but if at the end of the day... If at the end of the day, whether it's the A, B or C land, you get the equivalent dollar value, does it make any difference which land the actual receives?
Andy finished. That's why I'm not sure. So the point is the creditor does get the land at the end of the day.
Well, he may get the land at the end of the day one way or another, but the fact of the matter is the way he's having to pursue that debt is very onerous.
So what's the alternative?
The alternative is the debtor, once he receives the proceeds of the sale, discharges the debt.
But that's what he should have done, but he's obviously not.
Exactly. Yeah, but... So there should be a way of enforcing that at the time.
Sorry?
There should have been a mechanism to enforce that at the time.
But they don't... But how would you... I don't think... I mean, you can't create a mechanism if nobody... We're talking about a case where we're just talking about knowledge we don't know. You know, they're two separate court cases in a sense. They're two separate things. You know, you have a crash on a Monday and you sell your land on a Tuesday, and you know, by the time all the discussions are worked out over the original crash, we're talking about 3 weeks later or something. You know, when the land was sold, how do you? I think even nowadays you have that problem. In all societies, you're going to have the issue that someone can, sort of pretend that they don't have debts or say that they don't have XYZ, but actually they do owe money. And then you're going to end up having to sort of chase it from somewhere else. The person who's going to lose out is the seller. Is the buyer, right? Yes, they are, because they're going to have to now go back and try and get their money back from this fellow who, you know, sold them land which he shouldn't have sold them. And that's a challenge, you know, but again, you're always going to have someone who's going to lose out here. So although you're saying it's the collector who lost out, I think the point is that all of this is in place. This entire idea is really there. The idea of nechasim meshubadim, you know, of these earmarked lands, is to protect the creditor, that they are able to get something back. But yeah, it's a challenge. I don't think there's a great solution in any of this. David, were you going
to
make a point?
I just want to say that it's not so different today. A creditor, where the debtor is seeking to avoid payment, is also in a difficult position. And what we've got here is not so different from bankruptcy laws in this country now, where a debtor passes land or other property away at a time when he's insolvent. And that can sometimes be recovered by the trustee in bankruptcy.
Right.
To the detriment of the ultimate purchaser.
Right. Yeah, and I think that the there was another point I was going to add, but which you reminded me of, which escapes me now. Okay. Oh yes. Sorry. There are also rules as to when you can claim from what we call nechasim meshubadim, from these earmarked lands. So one of the classic ones is that we're talking about a case where you have what's called a milve bishtar as opposed to a milve alpeh. So if I borrow money verbally from you, then I have no claim on land. But if I have a contract with you, then I do have that claim on you. So again, yes, this is without being being a sort of an expert in all of Baba Kama or all of Shas, I do think that, that my sense is that we must be talking in all these cases about a, about an example where the debtor, i.e. the seller, should be declaring, should be admitting that they have loans, that they owe money, etc., for whatever reason, and they are not. Yes, so they are the sort of the bad party in this case, but we don't really get into that sort of level of detail here. Okay. Fine. Okay, so we got to the two dots. Let's see if we'll go a little bit further and see if we can find a good place to stop. Pshita. So now we're going on to sort of similar types of cases, and we're going to just clarify that. Just to go back, we have now found a case where actually where what the Braisa was teaching us was that three people who buy at the same time, all the debtors can come and claim from all of them, and one person who buys one after another, the same thing can be true. All the debtors can come, the debtors can claim from all of the lands. He can pay back from any of the lands that he bought, even if they were bought at separate times, because, as we said, because of this this principle which was originally there for his benefit and actually now is working against him. Okay, that was the conclusion of that Gemara. Shita. So it seems simple, says the Gemara, but never quite is. Mochar lokeach benonis v'ziburis. If the if you sold off your middle, your level two and your level three, your middle and your lower levels, v'shier it is, and you left behind the best level, the top level land. Then everybody has to come along and collect from this best land, because that is the last land which you sold. And as we said before, if you sell it off, presumably to three different people, you're left with the idis, right? Here you yourself are left with the best type of land, and therefore everybody has to claim from that, right? And this Beinonis and Ziburis, the level two and three, right? Then you don't have them, right? Listenhu gabei, you're no longer holding on to them. Demotzi lemeimar lehu, you can say, what can you say? Govum we Beinonis v'Ziburis. You should be able to take from this level two and level three, Delo nichali betakanto derabonon, right? So now the Gemara is saying it doesn't work for me. This particular institution, again, similar type of thing, that actually this institution is not working for me, and therefore what I want to do is I don't want you to take from my best type of land, because actually it's working against me. This is interesting, because this is almost, okay, maybe I'm not following this, but it sounds like this is a contradiction. Let's go a little further and see if we can figure this out. Avo, continues the Gemara. But mochar idis v'shir beninis v'ziburis, if you sell off your best land and you're left with the beninis and the ziburis, the middle and the lower level, then what should you do? So I'm slightly confused, because this is going against what we said before. So now let's just clarify. So explain over here. Legabe Adam, we're talking about a person. Oh, sorry. So now
we're talking a buyer from a buyer.
Yeah, exactly, right. Correct. Exactly. Yeah. So one on to the next. Thank you very much. So now mochar. So that I should have. That's what mochar halokeach. I wasn't paying attention. Mochar halokeach means that the buyer now sells on. These two lands, right? So you bought all three lands from from this fellow who earned a lot of money. You bought all three of the lands, and then you sold on two of the others. So now, if you sell on two of the others and you keep the best one, so the Gemara says that's clear that in a sense you can say this isn't working for me, and therefore I want you to take from the other types of land. But now, what about the other case where you sell on the best type of land and you left with level two and three? What exactly happens? Does does the person who is owed damages, I'm assuming, right?
Can the creditor complain? Can the creditor claim from the person who purchased the second
It's only we're talking about a case of damages, because otherwise, what's the issue, right? Everyone else is going to be able to take back from Bin and Zaburis anyway. So the point is, because this idis is missing now, because the best type of land is missing, so the question is, are you able to now take back? Is the person who is owed money for damages, presumably that's the question, I'm assuming. So Sovar Abaye LeMeimar. We're going to see basically a debate between Abaye and Rav, which is a again classic pairing. Sovar Abaye LeMeimar, he says as follows. To also kulhu govim idis, that everyone should be able to take from the idis. Sorry, it's not about the damages. He's saying everyone should be able to take from the idis. Why? Kivan shehinish ara achorina biyad achayev, because that was the last thing to be in the hands of the we're picking up on the previous case. So when I bought the lands from this debtor, I bought the idis last. I bought the best land last. And now while I'm holding all three of them, I can claim that I can say that actually this rabbinic institution is working against me, and therefore I want you to take what you should be owed otherwise. Now that I have sold it on, right, it's harder for me to take that claim. The question is whether I can still make that claim now that I have sold it on, right? So Abaye says the Asukul who govu me idis. Now that I've sold it on, then actually that is the land that I because in a sense the second seller can't make that claim. The second seller can't make that claim, and therefore what happened originally comes back into full force, right? What happened originally, i.e., that the last field standing in the hands of the debtor was this best field, and therefore that principle of that was the one which in a sense carried carried all the debts at the time, even though it was then sold on to the same fellow, because he's now sold it on to someone else. Now it all comes back in full force, and therefore that's the opinion of a buyer. Then everybody can go on to buyer number two, right? They've now got a fourth person added into the mix, buyer number two, and claim from that best land, which is now in the hands of buyer number two. But Omer le Robert says, Robert disagrees. Ma mocha rishon l'sheni. When you sell this land on to the second person, you're not just selling the land. This is Robert's, Robert's presentation. You're not just selling the land on. You're selling ma mocha rishon l'sheni kol zechus shetova liyodi. You're selling any zechus, any merits, any sort of benefits that come along with this land as well. I.e., that should include any benefit that you yourself would have had from it, which was, for instance, you could, your benefit of being able to say that actually this is working against me. And because you can have, in a sense, that when you buy that land, you're also carrying any benefits that it has with it. So the Gemara continues to clarify. So it says, "V'kivon de'ilu osu gabe lokeach rishon." If the debtors would have come to the first fellow, then what would he have said? Motzi agvilahu af al pi dechiz. Sorry, motzi agvilahu. He could have said mebenunis v'ziboros. He could have made them claim from level two and level three. So too af al pi dechizavni. Even though he's now sold it on benunis v'ziboros. Sorry, af al pi dechizavni benunis v'ziboros. Even though you have now sold on the others, akati idis. B'nei Chorin Havai, that is still considered to be B'nei Chorin, technically. Ein Nifram in the Chosim Mishvadim calls man the Ikka B'nei Chorin. You cannot claim from these Imok lands while you have land that is able to be sold from. So in a sense, that's Abaye's opinion. Motzi Amalei, what you can say is no. Lo Nichali B'tahai Takana. That doesn't work for me. This institution doesn't work for me. The second buyer can basically make the same claim. Gavi Bininis Viziboris, he can say claim take from the level two and level three. Why? The Chizovin Lokeach Sheni Adaita, because when I bought it, Adaita the Kol Zechusa the Havale Larishon Begavo Zovin. When I bought Adaita means, you know, on the my intention in a sense when I bought it was that I bought it with all the benefits that the first fellow had already. Okay, so just to clarify, we have now you know, this debtor who sells on land to buyer one buys all the lands, but he buys the best land last, right? Just as now buyer one sells on the best land to buyer two. Now, in theory, that best land was the last one to be held on to by the debtor, and therefore that should be the one which carries all the claims. But what buyer two, that's what Abaya says. Abaya says that because that was the last land standing, all the debts are on that land, and therefore everybody who comes now for a claim has to go to buyer two to get from that land, because that was the last land standing in the debtor's possession, and therefore that's the one that carries all the debts. Rava says no. When buyer two bought it from buyer one, he bought it with all the benefits that buyer one had, and just as buyer one, who bought all three of the fields, can say, I prefer you to take from a different field, and I have that right because this entire institution was done for my benefit, buyer two can effectively make the same claim. And I think that's where we're going to have to leave it. That's where we're going to have to leave it today. Okay, so that's basically the debate between Abaya and Rava, and we're going to pick up from there in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, if that's okay. All right, any last comments or questions?
At the end of the day, whatever happens, whichever land the seller or the creditor gets, is the same dollar value. Yes. Maybe I've missed something. And therefore, whether it's land, best, middle, or end, the value of what he claimed is exactly the same. So what difference does it make which land he gets his debt from?
But people have a preference. So yeah, I think this is, again, I think we do come back to this. Yes, you're right. It's the same dollar value, but the point is people do have a preference, and therefore if they prefer one type of land, then they, in some cases they can make that claim. In other cases they can't. If we're talking about damages payments, then they can, and other payments they can't. So again, that's what this Gemara is discussing. You're right. It's the same dollar value all the way through.
See, I can see an argument if the best quality land is next to their land. I can see there would be an argument why they would want that particular land. But if it makes no difference geographically where that land is, in some ways, the thing isn't quite as complicated as it appears to be, because you always get the same dollar value.
Again, but people have a preference. Okay. I guess. You know, I think you know, there's higher level and lower level, and particularly when you, again, I don't know what the talking about properties of properties, maybe that's true, but particularly when we're talking about fields, right, you may have better quality fields and you may prefer to have a smaller field, which, you know, which okay. I'm not much of a farmer, but you may prefer to have a smaller field which you feel is going to grow your crops better than a larger field which won't do as much. So yes, dollar value is the same dollar value, but the point is there is going to be a preference, even though it's a small preference, but yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Thank you very much.
2 weeks' time.
Looking for 2 weeks' time, yes, 2 weeks' time.
Okay. Thanks.